Season 6, Episode 2, Cop in a Bottle. It opens up with a murder scene where two gentlemen are dead in the street, and Sipowicz is talking to an off-duty cop named Mike, who is a famous face, if you recognize him. He's a Larry Bradenburg. He was actually a witness, well, a victim of a crime, in an earlier episode of NYPD Blue.
He owns a bar, right, and he gets stuck up?
And he gets shot in the head by, like, a really weak-ass gun.
Yeah,
he's the one that, like, took a gun out of a dude's hands after he got shot in the face. I guess they like that performance so much, they're just like, come on back. As Sipowicz is talking with Mike about what happened here, Sipowicz is upset because he can tell that Mike is dealing with a little, a little post-drinky forgetfulness. He constantly refers to him being a drunk, says, get this rum hound some coffee. He's getting more and more upset at the fact that he doesn't know all the details because two men are shot.
And he is not a fan of this man.
And I wrote down here, high and mighty Sipowicz, who's getting really pissed at him, even though Sipowicz has gotten himself into some situations like this because of his drinking. So if anyone should be sympathetic, it should be Sipowicz.
Very true. Like, he shows no sympathy whatsoever.
He shows no sympathy when it's like, dude, you were this guy. Like, you were exactly this dude. Medavoy and Martinez show up to Sipowicz and say there were some people hooking in some trailers across the street from the coffee shop. And they'll canvas and look the strolls for the hookers that usually are in there. It's also important to note that Mike is saying that he came out of the diner and saw what was going on and tried to help, and a witness inside said that he was gone an hour and a half from the diner before the shooting.
Yeah, that's a really long time.
The guy who owns the diner is trying to stick up for him. It's more evident when Simone and Russell show up, and Simone's a little slow to get out of the car.
Yeah, just a little.
It's pretty... We talked a little bit about how they're laying it on thick, and they're laying it on pretty thick.
Have they just stopped caring about, like, protocol? Can Simone and Diane just be married and work together like it's not a problem?
I guess so. I mean, you know,
We know they didn't come from home. We know they didn't come from work right now.
Yeah, and there's a moment where Russell is clearly trying to get Andy alone, and is trying to do it by saying, like, oh, are these the bodies, you know? Are these the victims? And he's like, yeah. And then once Russell gets her alone, and Simone's talking to the diner owner who's trying to cover for Mike, she's like, he's getting really bad, Andy. He's like, yeah, I could tell with his chest cold and everything. And she's like, he can barely put on his own clothes. After Simone kind of makes fun of the diner for giving just a character statement and not a real witness account, he drops because he can't stand up anymore. Sipowicz and Russell get him into the car, and Medavoy and Martinez help out. Sipowicz is like, hey, you're going to take Mike in. And Mike's like, well, Andy, I'd rather go with you. And he's just like, you shut up.
Like, it's kind of funny because, like, Andy's, like, sole purpose of being there is to solve a murder. But as soon as his partner, like, can't stand, he just totally ignores his job.
Well, that's not important anymore. What is important is...
And he's like, we gotta get him to the hospital. We gotta go.
They also mentioned that they'll get Jill in early, which, I mean, this is another situation where it seems like the whole office is taking care of one murder. There's no other murders happening, it's just this one, and everybody's working it at the same time.
Well, yeah, there's nothing else going on today.
After they take Simone to the hospital, it is the opening credits, and this is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, go through every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue, and this is the theme song to NYPD Blue. We'll be right back. When the show comes back, Simone is in the hospital getting a whole bunch of tests done, and Andy is just getting all anxious and talking shit. Because the
it's borderline annoying.
Because the doctor isn't there right away.
Yeah, and they're just doing what they can for the moment, you know.
And I mean, just from my experience in hospitals, I have determined that basically, when you're in a hospital, if it's not an immediate emergency, you're gonna be able to tell by the people's demeanor. Everybody's immediately on high alert when they're dealing with being in a hospital, but you have to take the cues from the doctors, which Andy isn't. He's just getting upset.
Andy already has a bias against doctors, though, so...
Yeah, he keeps saying things like, the test results are printing out, but no one's here to read them. You know, getting more and more pissy. Saying that guy's an optimist when he says a doctor will be by to read it.
He's just being like a catty little bitch.
When a doctor finally gets in, he runs down the symptoms. Well, he first makes Andy and Russell leave, which I was like, oh, well, that's good. That's great news. That's usually when they give great news.
So, to be honest with you, when the scene first started and all of those nurses were just like walking around those two while they stood in this really small space taking up room doing nothing, I kept wondering, like, how long are they just going to let those two stand there?
Before they're just
and like, finally, like, a doctor shows up and is like, hey, get the fuck out.
When they finally get out, he tells Simone, hey, so you have some enlargement around your heart. It seems like you have some evidence of heart failure. And while that isn't necessarily a heart attack, and it doesn't mean that you're like, your heart is just done, it's just, that just seems to be what's happening. So we have
it's not working at its 100, like its best capacity or whatever.
So they keep asking him, is it a heart attack? Which is like, that made me laugh because throughout this entire episode, so I don't just keep saying it every time they ask, the entire episode, everybody's like, so is it a heart attack? Is it a heart attack? And it's like, there are other ways your heart could kill you. A heart attack is, I know a heart attack is serious, like, I know it's a very serious thing, but the dude couldn't breathe? Like, if your lungs don't work, you're also gonna die. Kirk,
if you can't breathe, you're gonna die.
I don't know, maybe it's just this post-COVID world where it's like, it's not just heart attacks that'll kill you, it's also not just heart attacks that will kill your heart.
No, I agree with you. I'm with you on that, but, like, I just, like, it seems to be a theme in this show whenever there's, like, going to a doctor where the characters that are cops are just, like, go to the doctor and the doctor will be like, we gotta run these tests, it seems like your heart is failing, you have, like, your heart's, like, breaking down, blah, blah, blah. That doesn't mean it's, like, failing. It just means it's not working properly. We need to run some tests. And then everyone looks at the doctor and goes, so he can get out of here pretty soon, right?
Yeah, that was another thing.
And it's like, well, we gotta run some tests and see where we are, and then I can make, like, a better prediction. Efsipwitz then, like, just tosses his, does that, like, hand toss in the air and goes, oh, can never get a straight answer from these fuck faces. And it's like, dude, like, I don't know why, but it's just, like, a theme in this show for no one to, like, let doctors, like, try to do their job.
Oh, you mean, like, the doctor that they woke up to try and get some information on a rape? How they weren't letting him do his job of sleeping?
I have received numerous support emails about my stance on that.
Okay, so. First off, that's impossible because that episode hasn't dropped yet. So... You're talking nonsense. All right.
Hey, Kirk, I got a question, though. Was it a heart attack?
If you had to put a gun to his head, it wasn't a heart attack. I also wanted to mention, there's a point in this conversation with the doctor, because eventually he brings Russell in to go over what's going on, and Simone even says, yeah, it's better you bring her in. My partner will probably put some of your staff here in beds, which is like, yeah, that's great. Maybe you should just remove them from
extra beds. Yeah.
The thing that the doctor says.
I also found it kind of funny, real quick, like, all the nurses are running around, like, these monitors and everything's going off. The doctor shows up, like, reads a few things, asks, like, two more questions, and then goes, like, yeah, I'm going to need everyone to leave. Like, it's just, like, kind of, like, the sequence of events was, like, really funny.
I also found it funny that when he brings Russell back in, he says, like, oh, I'm pretty sure it's an infection. We're going to have to keep him here for a couple days to run some tests. And she goes, and if it's an infection, you should treat it. The quote he says, the quote the dude says.
Most, right?
He says, I certainly hope we'd be able to treat it. Now, that is not what you want to hear from a doctor.
Yeah, and then later on, jumping ahead, they meet another doctor because they have to go to a different unit. But we can get more depth on that. Same thing. She says something about it being an infection and being able to treat it. And he says something along the lines of, like, most infections we were able to treat. And when they said that my ears went up. And I was like, oh, I was like, you sly fucker. Like, that's so you guys can't get sued. This is why Sipowicz hates you guys. I was like, that was such a slick little move to, like, take away all, like, liability.
Russell goes out to explain that to Andy, and then they roll him out to take him to CCU, Critical Care Unit, and Andy makes the TV is broken on room 5 joke or some bullshit.
Oh, it was the Critical Care Unit?
I thought they said CCU.
I thought it was something had to do, because they said that he needed to go to the cardiac something. So I thought it was like a cardiac unit. Never mind.
Maybe it is cardiac.
Doesn't matter. This scene of events also starts off the acting choice where Russell decides that the way she's gonna play, like, concerned / sad / worried, is she's just gonna eye squint the whole time. She's just sitting there and she's like eye squinting the whole time. Like, I don't know if she's trying to make herself cry or if, like, the director of this episode was like, yeah, let's go with that. You can't do it any other way, I guess. It was just a very, very weird choice.
Sipowicz is told to go back to the house, so he does. When he does and gets there, everyone's concerned. They want to know what's going on with Simone, as anybody would. And he tells them, they're not 100% sure what's happening. They think it's an infection. Russell's still with him. And then Martinez is like, hey, we got Walsh in here, and he's getting the DTs pretty bad, Andy. So Andy rolls down to the desk sergeant office and goes, where's your bottle? And the guy's like, why, you want to get me jammed up? And he's like, no, Walsh is upstairs from the 2-7. He needs a drink really bad, and I need to get a statement from him. And then he's like, oh, so you're going to jam him up like you tried to jam up my guy? Is that supposed to be Tommy? That's got to be Tommy, right?
Oh. It's gotta be.
Because I was thinking, who could it possibly be? And I think it has to be Tommy.
Yeah, I wasn't even thinking about that.
Then Sipowicz just straight up like, no, but I'll jam you up if you don't fucking calm down and give me the goddamn bottle. And the guy takes him to the John to go get it.
Again, we're just totally, like, totally cool with this dude just drinking on the job.
Well, it's not in the scene, but Sipowicz brings up a Diet Pepsi bottle while Martinez and Medavoy are sitting with the guy, and it's clearly full of something to drink, and he slams it on the table, and Mike goes, is that right, Andy? And he goes, he gets two drinks, and that's it. And then, when I come back, you better start writing. And he just goes to his desk and sits down.
Well, because, like, Andy knows he's not going to get anything from him until he gets a drink.
We go to a commercial break. When we come back, Jill comes in early, and she went canvassing around the area. The first thing she asks is, how's Bobby? And Sipowicz is like, nobody knows. Then she lets him know that there was a guy running away from the scene. There's a trail of blood from the crime scene to about a block and a half over where somebody caved in a dude's head to steal his car.
Yeah.
There's like, well, what did Walsh say? He's like, Walsh hasn't said anything yet. He needs to get his alcohol ratio in balance.
Like, I understand why Andy's, like, freaking out. He's worried about his friend. Blah, blah, blah. But, like, at the same time, like, there's no need to be a douche, you know? He's being a douche this whole time.
As he's going in to talk to Walsh, because he gets the notice that he's okay to talk, Jill gets a call and it has nothing to do with Sipu or Simone, so then he just goes in. When he gets into the room, Walsh is like, perfectly okay now. He explains exactly what happens.
I mean, he's a little swishy, but yeah, he's perfectly okay.
He says there he saw a struggle between a 20s Hispanic and a 20s white male. He approached both of them and shot the Hispanic in the struggle because it looked like he was trying to rob him. He looks at Andy and he's like, so did he come up wrong? And he's like, yeah, he's got a bunch of collars in BCI. Why didn't you tell me about the second guy? He's like, we know there's a second guy. And he's like, don't trifle with me, Walsh. He's like, oh,
I mean, I get it. Andy went out of his way to, like, you know, break protocol and get him drunk. The least the guy can do is, like, be honest with him.
And he says, oh, yeah, well, I wasn't sure if there was a second guy or if I was just seeing him because he's that drunk. He also, like, he's like, oh, well, for all honesty, I was getting a boot out of my trunk. So he was just drinking hard in his trunk outside the diner, which we'll find out is a lie.
That's what that meant?
Yeah, he said that he was getting a load, like, from his, I think he was getting, he said, I got a boot from the trunk of my car. He was drinking outside.
Did he say a boot? I thought he said he was, like, I was taking a belt in the back of my car.
It was a belt.
And I thought that meant he was a prostitute.
No. I thought belt meant he was just drinking in his car. Look, I don't know what all the drunk terminology regarding clothing is. But I do know that the British call the trunk the boot, so maybe I was just confusing what... Maybe I thought this guy was cultured in some way.
I'm gonna just go by this dude's accent. I don't think he's that cultured. No offense. No offense, Mike Walsh.
He said he didn't fight him because he thought it could be a bystander, and he said he was about 5'8", and Sipowicz said, was he a gangbanger or fresh off the boat? Which was like, okay, Sipowicz, all right. You do know that Martinez is in the room with you. You shouldn't be saying...
Dude. I don't know what it is about this season, but... So when we started this, I kind of just kept going. And there's a lot where Sipowicz is listed some borderline shit that's like, why are we ramping up his racism this season? But it is, it's pretty interesting.
Sipowicz, I think at one point Sipowicz is like, look, my partner is sick, you gotta give me something. And he's like, oh, I think he had a ponytail. And he's like, you think he had a ponytail? He's like, I'm like 80% on the ponytail.
That exchange was pretty funny.
And Sipowicz is like, okay, great. And he leaves the room, and the guy starts, like, rubbing his mouth. And Medavoy says, don't start signifying, you ain't getting any more drink. We cut back to the hospital, and now...
And then he, like... Did he have some in his cup still? Because he held onto that cup, like, pretty tight.
I don't think so. Because Sipowicz says he gets two drinks, and then he'll be ready to talk. I think he was even saying, like, as soon as he gets his two drinks, he's done. And then they locked up the drink in the locker. They cut back to the hospital... And the doctor from the dye incident with Sipowicz is taking care of Simone. After looking at some stuff, he's like, do you want me to bring in your wife? And he brings in Russell. He says it's looking like an infection or inflammation of the heart. And he's like, I'm not sure on the time frame. But the best chance is 3 to 4 days from now. Because we don't know exactly what it is. Russell's like, should I call the office? And Simone's like, don't call them yet, because if this doctor changes his mind to what happened, then they're gonna come down and kill him. Which I know is a joke, but, like, why is it okay to joke that they're gonna hurt doctors this much?
No, I'm with you. I thought that was kind of weird, especially, like, they already prefaced it with, like, Andy earlier, him being, like, out of control. It's also kind of weird how, like, into him they are as his doctor.
Yeah, they're super like into dude.
They are into him being their doctor, being his doctor. It's really weird. I mean, also foreshadowing, I also found it kind of weird and thought, like, Russell and him were being a little too flirty, but...
Well, he's sitting down, Yeah, I'm definitely moving this to the end of the episode because it's spoiler. The next scene, we have Fancy, who gets a visitor, some very severe-looking white guy.
Yeah, I wonder what this casting call was.
Well, that dude, I could have swore I saw that dude's face before. It turns out he was one of the INS officers in Men in Black. If you remember the first Men in Black that opens with the INS officers and the immigrants, and one of them's actually an alien.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Where he's all dressed up, but he's dressed up like a regular police officer. And they get that van of people. Yeah. Gotcha.
When
did he not play another character in NYPD Blue?
I cannot. I wrote down what he was in, and I wrote it so fucking small and shitty. I can't even fucking read it. So I only remember Men in Black.
There we go.
And from what I saw, or from what I have here, it looks like he was in something called Lacan Blue Street. I don't fucking know what that means.
Lacan Blue Streak?
Street. It's like, because I don't know what this is. I don't fucking know what it is. I'm not going to look it up.
He may have been in Blue Streak with Martin Lawrence.
That is what he was in. He was in L.A. Confidential and Blue Streak. That's what I wrote.
Okay.
Lacan
Blue.
Okay. His name's Steve Rankin. He's been in some shit. Anyway, he comes into Fancy's office, and he comes in while Fancy's on the phone with, I guess, the chief of D's. I guess that must be who he's talking to. And he's running down the story with Mike Walsh about what happened.
Well, yeah, because this is important. It's an off-duty cop unloading his gun, so it's going to cause the chief of D's to be highly involved.
The guy says his name, and I don't think I even wrote it down. Yep, didn't write it down. I just wrote Mike Walsh's boss. Mike Walsh's boss asks Fancy, so what happened, and don't give me the lube job.
He could be like a human version of Gonzo. Like the way his nose curves, and like he makes his face, and he's grouchy and shit.
I didn't think about his Muppetness. Like you did, but I mean, okay.
I think about everyone's Muppetness.
About their Muppetality. He mentions that 6 weeks as this guy's boss, he would assume that he was super loaded at the time of the shooting, and he was fighting off the DTs now, which is both true.
But he's not fighting off the DTs because he had some drinks.
Fancy goes a little hard on the guy and says, "Look, your managerial problems are not mine. His state of being doesn't affect the outcome of this story, so that's not our problem." So then,
because the guy's trying to make the alcohol the problem, and Fancy's like, "Look, like to be honest, the alcohol was not a problem in this situation. He actually did everything correct."
Which he doesn't know yet, because they still haven't gotten the ballistics back on who killed who. So it could be very possible that he killed both of them, but they don't know yet.
True, but everything is looking like he did everything correct.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he announced himself, he had his, I mean, as correct as anyone can be when they're about to murder somebody. But, you know what I mean?
I do know.
Never mind.
He asks, where is he? And they say he's in the coffee room. So they go into the coffee room, or he goes into the coffee room, and he's like, "Hey, Mike, how's it going?" And he's like, "It's going all right." And he's like, "It smells like booze in this room." And Medavoy tries to cover by saying, "Oh, yeah, they had a skull in here earlier. Pretty sure it's off his fumes." And then the boss gets real close, showing no social distancing to this guy, and says, "That's coming out of you." And then storms out and gets on the phone. When he gets on Jill's phone, she, like, mockingly goes, "Feel free." And he's calling someone while Fancy's on the phone with somebody. And during that time, Sipowicz, Martinez, and Jill find somebody to like, a guy with a ponytail. And he's like, "Maybe we should go pick this guy up." And then Sipowicz is like, "Yeah, well, good luck getting permission, because the bosses spend 80% of their time on the phones." Like, he's getting all upset and stupid about it.
He's redirecting his anger, you know, like a grown-up.
Because they have to wait for permission to go get this guy, Martinez is like, yeah, one time my uncle went blue at a family function because he couldn't breathe, and it turns out he has asthma. And Sipowicz, because he's redirecting his anger and he doesn't know how to deal with his stress, is just like, yeah, well, that's asthma, and you don't get asthma this late in life. And then she's like, yeah, we're just saying it could be like that. He's like, no, asthma you get early. This is sudden onset. It could be anything.
Again, being the optimist.
Fancy comes out and says that, you know, the ballistics came back and it looks like Walsh's gun only hit the perpetrator and not the other guy who's the victim. They run down that they want to get this guy. And then the other lieutenant says, I'm gonna have the sheriff surgeon inspect Walsh. And because they did that,
I didn't even know that was a thing you could do.
And then Fancy is like, hey, look here. We just got ballistics back. It looks like he was good on the shoot. And sure, he has problems, but do you really want to upend this cop's life and all of this when it turns out he may have done nothing wrong? And that you only did it just to screw with him after our investigation shows that he didn't do anything wrong. What I loved about the exchange is that the guy goes, I'm going to call off the surgeon from downstairs. And it was like, so you didn't win the argument. Like, you...
I didn't quite understand that.
You didn't... You came out looking like the moron and the asshole, but you... So your response was, yeah, you're right. I'm going to go do what you said, but elsewhere. Like, I don't know, it just seemed really funny. Like, super...
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you do it in front of me or not, as long as you do it. You know what I mean?
Like... You just do it. Next scene, Mike Walsh is observing Ricky... What's his name? Like, Ricky Rodriguez? I think that's his name. He's observing...
I thought it was Ricky Ricardo.
No. He wasn't complaining about what Lucy was doing, yet still being married to her.
Lucy, I'm home.
Mike is observing Ricky Rodriguez, and he can't say 100% if it's him. And Sipowicz says, yeah, why make life easy? And he goes in to talk to Ricky. Mike, who is so fucking transparent, is like, man, I'm kind of hungry. I think I should get out to get a meal. And then Fancy's like, order something. We'll bring it in for you. And Sipowicz walks in, and they're like, yeah, Ricky says he got an injury on his arm from a rake. And Sipowicz just slams him on the table and rips off the bandage. And he's like, huh, looks like that rake shot you. And he's like, oh, that was a gunshot from a previous incident. And Sipowicz is like, I'm going to pull that thing out with tweezers myself. And if it matches up, you're screwed. They get the dude to give a statement basically assuming that his running buddy is still alive. Which is kind of fucked up.
Yeah. I don't know if kinda is the word. I think it's pretty fucked up.
Well, we also know that this dude basically murdered a dude for his car.
Yeah. Shoot, too.
And he says he'll give a statement as long as Miguel's alright and he won't testify against him in court. And then Shannon tries to walk in to give him some information and Sipowicz just screams at him. And Martinez goes up...
Real crazy with him.
Martin, what's cool is Shannon is just like, alright. Like, just his reaction was like, okay. And Martinez goes out to talk to him, and he says a prostitute has some info that she'll trade for some credit card caller thing. And it turns out it's the same hooker who helped bring Andy Jr.'s killers to justice. Martinez brings her into a room, and she says that she was actually with Mike, who was whoring. He ran out with his pants half down to take care of the gentleman who... I guess he was harassing a dude that the prostitute knew.
Yeah.
And the guy who the prostitute knew was taking care of these quote-unquote grease balls that had been knocking over the trailers, which she then apologizes to Martinez.
And yeah, it's just insult Martinez day.
She says, yeah, he ran out there with his pants half done, tripping over himself, and then shot the guy and shot his running buddy, who was coming out in between cars, and said, he's a pretty good shot for a drunk who can't get a hard on. And says, he's being such a nice guy, I kind of feel bad for giving him up for Horan.
It's like, damn, dude, you don't have to put him out there like that.
So that, it's like, hey, this guy, yeah, he whores around. Also, he can't get it up. He also ran out with his pants undone. But he's a pretty good shot. That's cool.
that's ridiculous.
We cut to the hospital.
She puts, like, all his shit out there.
They cut back to the hospital where Simone and Russell are watching some TV. The doctor comes in and says there's no major change, so they got to do an angiogram in a couple of days, and he still thinks it's an infection, and she goes, oh, is that treatable? And he said, yeah, most of them are. That goes back to what you said. Yeah, most of them are treatable.
Yeah, most of them. Once we figure out what it is, then we'll know. And it's like, oh, you sneaky little fuck.
He then is about to leave, and he goes, I have an uncle that's a cop in Boston. Well, I just have an uncle that's a cop. And they're like, oh, what bureau? And he's like, no, he's up in Boston. And then Russell's mom's like, oh, I have, my mother's father was a cop in Newton. And the guy's like, yeah, that's right around the corner. I just wanted to say, I appreciate what you guys do out there. Like, his voice changed to say that. I don't know if you noticed it, but he was like, I appreciate what you guys do out there.
Oh, yeah, I noticed it. And not one of them said, like, hey, I appreciate you trying to keep me alive. Or I appreciate you giving people the gift of, like, extending their life. Thanks. Thanks for that.
They mentioned that they both can get a meal delivered to the room. And Simone says, hey, get the Jell-O even if you don't want it. Also, I think this is the scene where he's like, she's like, are you comfortable? And he's like, yeah, I'm comfortable. I just wish these robes would cover up what they're supposed to. And she's like, yeah, the curse of the large privates. Yeah. And you're like, guys, you cannot give him a blowy in a fucking hospital. What is the fucking...
We're just slipping in dick jokes, dude.
You cannot fuck him in a hospital, bit.
Like, they're in a writer's room and they're like, oh, we have a lull right here. After the doctor leaves, like, what should we do? I don't know. We should make sure that the people know how much they love each other and how much she loves his huge dick. Okay, cool. Yeah, got it. Boom. Write it out.
Cuts to Medavoy and Martinez in the locker room. And Martinez is like, look, man, I'm just sick of Andy's pessimism, man. I'm sick of his negative attitude. And Medavoy is like, look, my ex-wife's cousin had the same thing and was out in 4 days after antibiotics. Andy's just, you know, a little bit worried about Andy. I mean, worried about Simone. And Martinez is like, yeah, but he doesn't have to be so negative all the time about it. And then Andy walks in and he goes, what'd that whore say? And I was like, it was pretty funny.
Right on cue.
Martinez is like, she just confirmed the story, says that she was with Walsh. And he goes, did you write that on paper? And Martinez is like, you think you're the only cop that knows how to do this job? And he's like, what the hell's your problem? He's like, I didn't put it on paper so it would keep him out of trouble. And Medavoy is like, that's the good side of Andy, keeping this guy out of trouble. And I was like, is that a good thing? Like, is this a good thing, really? Keeping him out of trouble? Like,
right.
Like, I don't...
Right, that's a good side of Andy, him purposefully not doing his job right. And letting a troubled cop who may end up killing someone stay on the force. But, you know, that's the good side of Andy.
Andy walks into Walsh and says, basically, it looks like you came out right on the shooting. We got the second guy and he wrote out the whole story. And he's like, oh, that's great. That's fantastic. He's like, also, a prostitute came in and said you were whoring with her, which also proves that he was lying to them about what he was doing. And he's like, oh, wow, man. And he's like... Yeah, we're not putting that in the fives. He's like, oh, well, thanks, because if that's in the fives, then my boss is just going to send me up the river. And then Andy's like, look, I'm going to talk to you because we're the same kind of drunk. You cannot keep drinking and keep doing this job. And the guy's like, well, these shootings were good. And he's like, yeah, these ones are good, but your boss is trying to hang you, and the next squad may not be looking to protect you. And he go, and then Walsh is like, food for thought. And Sipowitz is just like, look, my partner is sick, you will or you won't. And it's like, why does it matter that your partner's sick?
Yeah, like, what? He keeps throwing that out there, and I just don't understand why.
Because it's like...
what sympathy are you looking for exactly?
Because I feel like they kind of lost the scene. Because the real big question... Because we're now basically almost done with this guy. Which, so I'll get to that after. But the big fucking question was like... This moment would have been Andy sitting down, looking the dude in the eye and saying, here's the deal. You clearly have a fucking problem. I had the same problem. I had to get it fixed because I almost died. So what you need to do is you need to fucking get it together.
Get it right.
Yeah, like that's the talk he should have had. Instead he was like, hey man, the next time it's not going to be so easy. And the guy's like, yeah, maybe you're right. And he's like, look, my partner's sick. I don't have fucking time for this. Like, I don't have time to... My partner's sick and I can't even go see him, so you should just get your shit together. And it was like, I don't know.
A little bit like that.
When he leaves the room, the entire squad except Dolores, she's just eavesdropping using the phone in the middle of the squad room. They're all in Fancy's office, and Fancy's on the phone, clearly with Russell. And Sipwitz is freaking out, not letting him just listen to what's going on. Fancy is just relaying, it looks like it's an infection and not a heart attack. And as he's on the phone, he says, yeah, I'll tell him, cool. And then hangs up the phone. He's like, looks like it's an infection. And he's like, well, what kind? He's like, they're trying to figure that out. He's like, well, there's sore throats and bubonic plague. And then Sipowitz was like, what's that last part at the end? He's like, oh, she just wanted to thank you for taking him to the hospital. He's like, oh, she didn't want to talk to me? And I was like, Jesus fucking Christ, dude. Like, it's not about you right now.
Yeah, none of this is about him. It blew me away watching that episode. It's like, dude, your friend is like super sick, bro. Just chill. See what he needs. Like, see what they need. Like, your needs don't fucking matter.
And then Sipowitz leaves the office after saying, well, like, next time
call your wife. Like, talk to her about all this shit. Like, I don't know. It was just very odd the way he was acting.
And I have to mention this, as he's walking away, he's like, make sure to tell Diane you're welcome next time you have a little chat. It's like, motherfucker, she called to let everybody know what's going on. She wanted to get back to fucking Bobby, you ass.
That was kind of funny.
And then Fancy's like, excuse me. Like, almost like the teacher or the nanny that's like, now I gotta go talk to the problem child. And Fancy lets him know Diane asked for him to swing by the hospital to pick her up. Sipwitz is like, oh, you want to make me look like an ass in front of those other people? And Fancy is like, I was considering their feelings that they weren't asked.
Right, so, like, that's actually, like, kind of a cool move, right? Like,
yeah, absolutely. Up.
Yeah, so my question is, like, what did Fancy think everyone else... He just got up and went to go talk to him. Like, what did he think everyone else thought he was talking to them about? You know what I mean?
Oh, I thought the same thing. I think they assumed he was talking to him like, hey man, you can't act like this, we're all going through this.
But like, they're all in the office when they hear Fancy say the words, yeah, he's right here. Okay, cool, yeah, I'll let him know. Okay, thanks, bye. And then he has his like little fit, and then Fancy's like, I'll be right back, and goes and talks to him like, what are they, like, you know what I mean? Like, he was definitely telling him something that no one else was allowed to know.
Well,
so your attempt at being subtle was like, it was gone.
Well, I think what was happening, and this is just my interpretation, is because they sit in the office and Medavoy goes, well, good news for Bobby. Like, good news for Bobby, at least, that it's just an infection. He's like, we should at least count our blessings. I think what they're thinking is Fancy's going to talk to the kid that's reacting poorly to the news, that he's going to have to buck up and still be an adult because we've still got shit to do. You know what I mean? They thought he was going to give him the speech like, hey, you're going to have to calm the fuck down or go home. Like, I can't have you working like this with witnesses and with perps. Like, I can't have you flying off the handle. You got to get this shit together. When really he was going to say, hey, by the way, that's not what they said to you.
Hey, fair enough, bro.
Fancy and Sipwitz are talking privately, and then Walsh comes out of the coffee room and he goes, this is a stand-up squad, and thank you guys. As Sipwitz goes to leave, Walsh goes, "You're a stand-up guy, Andy." And then Andy turns around and says, "I'm also frequently a pain in the balls." And then he leaves the squad. Then, the last scene of the episode, Russell and Simone are eating their dinners, and it's not tasting very good, as we can tell by Russell. And she's like, "Well, the Jell-O's good." And Simone's like, "You can always count on Jell-O." Then there's an alarm scare on his machine, and the nurse comes in and says, like, "Oh, one of the contacts fell off." And that happens all the time from just a little experience in the hospital. Sometimes the contacts are just not on the chest right, and it's just going to beep, like, every 5 seconds, and it's the fucking worst.
Well, that's annoying.
Andy shows up. Simone immediately asks, "How did Walsh turn out?" And he's like, "Well, the shooting was good, but how he is on a whole is a different story." And then Andy complains about Bill Clinton. They call him Andy Rooney, and he says, "Yeah, I like to give that guy a smack, too." Then Russell goes over all the things she has to bring back to the hospital.
What's wrong with Andy Rooney?
I don't know. Andy hates him, because he complains as much as Andy does, I guess.
That's funny. I just didn't know what the deal, like, why we had this hatred towards Andy Rooney. I never knew what Andy Rooney did wrong.
I don't know. Sipowicz, you know, he feels competitive for curmudgeonry, I guess. Russell goes over all the stuff she has to bring back, and she's like, "Your ring, your slippers, something else." I can't remember what the third thing is. Toothpaste, I think.
What ring? He's not wearing his ring?
Apparently not. Apparently he left his ring at home. Don't know why. Because Simone is smooth to the end, he says, "Just you, anything else is just a bonus," and gives her a little smooch. And then she leaves with Andy as he's taking his medicine.
A little smooch.
Just a little smooch. Little smoochy boochies. And as Andy and Russell walk out, they both get increasingly more worried and troubled. And she asks Andy, "Does he look better?" And he says, "Well, he says he feels more comfortable." And then he grabs her hand and holds it and says, "He's liable to come out of this better than new." And then they get on an elevator, and the elevator doors close as it looks like Russell's about to fucking cry. And Sipowicz is just kind of staring forward, and the episode ends. Anything else about this episode before we wrap it up?
No. I don't have anything about this episode. It's just setting up a grander story. I really liked the guy who played Tim Walsh. I think there was a reason why they brought him back as a character actor.
You mean Mike Walsh?
Yeah, Mike Walsh. I think Mike Walsh, the guy who played Mike Walsh, did a really good job, especially, like, he had to play a different character in, like, each scene. He's a guy going through, like, a bunch of different, he's going through, like, withdrawal, through being drunk, through shooting. So it was just all, did a pretty good job and was a good character. That's all I have for this one.
Every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AstroBrothersPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, where you find a podcast. We're on Instagram at AstroBrothersPodcast. We're on Twitter at AstroBrosPod. And you know what? Wear a mask. Distance socially. Be smart about what's going on. And have a good one.
I'm vaccinated.
Thank you once again for listening to another episode of NYPD Blue Balls. If you have a moment, please rate and review the show on whatever platform you're using to listen to it. It's how people see the podcast in the algorithm and hopefully end up watching more NYPD Blue. Now, if you need the show, it's on Hulu. It is on Amazon to purchase. It's on DVD to purchase in some areas. I would suggest Amazon and DVD purchases because we found out Hulu is actually editing episodes. They don't edit them. They are getting the television edits of the episodes, so sometimes you miss out on some stuff. We learned that last season. If you need more NYPD Blue info in your life, you can always check out True Blue, a book written about the first couple seasons. You can check out What Would Sipowicz Do, a book with a collection of articles about the show. And you can check out Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue. Anyways, after the song ends, there's going to be some clips that I cut out for spoilers. If you haven't been through the entire show before, or if you don't know what's coming up in the next couple episodes, I would turn off the podcast now. But if you do not care, spoilers ahead. Have a good one. Peace. Well, he's sitting down. He's sitting down. yeah, I'm definitely moving this to the end of the episode because it's spoiler. Do you think it's because he knew that guy was on the way out, and he's like, I better start putting in my seeds now. I better start laying that groundwork.
Laying that groundwork? Setting that foundation?
He's like,
he's pouring that slab.
He's ready to be that.
What if we can make like a different show that follows that doctor, and he's like a Dexter, where he just but he kills patients who have like hot wives, and then one season could be like one episode could or season or two or three seasons could be him slowly killing Bobby Simone.
I will say, and it'll be cut out and sent at the end, that last scene was the last part that almost got me a little bit. And it was mostly because knowing how this story plays out and knowing what the people go through when they kind of get in the elevator and the doors close and you're just like, oh yeah. Because when I described these first five episodes to Ben for the Binging with Ben stuff, I said the first five episodes of this season are kind of like a escalator that's just going down. Like, it just goes down and down and down, and then when you think, oh, we're going to level out and probably go up, it just goes down again.
And then you think, okay, now we're going to start to level out and go up, and then Ricky Schroeder shows up, and then there's just a hole, and you fall straight through. And you just keep going down, 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 down.